for our speaker today. Dr. Vicky Brown is a visionary thought leader of the Transformational Education Program here at the Criswell College. Her demonstrated history of synergistic cultivation of adaptable next-gen teaching professionals excels in local and global learning ecosystems, equipping students with competencies to deliver high-impact instruction across scalable educational contexts. Brown's advanced pedagogical expertise empowers future educators to lead learning innovation on a global scale through improved workflows, robust deliverables within best-in-class standards, and modernized, high-quality, results-driven solutions. At the end of the day, leveraging holistic values not only adds bleeding-edge generative agentic technology, but also visionary ethos trivium, future-proofing, revolutionary, disruptive transformation, drilling down, deep dive, keep me in the loop, looping you in, closing the loop by touching base and boiling the ocean, raising the bar, pushing the needle, win, 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 Dr. Vicky Brown.
If ChatGPT has ever met me, I didn't understand half the words in that description. So thank you, Adrian. Thank you very much. There's still music up here. There we go. I think. God has a sense of humor. I am firmly convinced of that. I was supposed to have done chapel 2 weeks ago when there would only have been about half this many people in here. And so I'd like to welcome you to Preview Day. This really is us as far as on the silliness scale on a certain level on Wednesdays. I am Dr. Vicky Brown. I am the director of the Bachelor of Science here at Criswell College, and it's in education. So when people ask me, so what do you teach? I say, I teach teachers to be teachers. And so I'm the only Bachelor of Science program here at Criswell College. I've been here 10 years, and I am incredibly thankful for all the brilliant people I get to spend every day with. I often go back to God has a sense of humor, and I tell students, I may not be the sharpest knife in the drawer, but I'm incredibly stubborn and was able to finally get my doctorate. Goodness, have I had it 10 years? I've had it 10 years. And be able to teach at this amazing institution and spend every day with incredible, incredible young people that sometimes challenge us. but it's amazing to watch as they walk across the stage. I wanted to start with a little bit of a history lesson. But before I do that, I have to make an announcement. I almost forgot. Okay. One pair off. And a different pair on. There. Y'all just wait. One of these days, you'll be carrying around 2, 3, and 4 pairs of glasses and try to keep up with them. I have been asked to make this announcement. This is from Dr. David Brooks. We have a new course that is going to launch in the spring, and this is how he would like you to think of it. It looks ironic that Proverbs addresses young men to make them wise, but at the end, the epitome of wisdom is a wise woman. At creation, God gave one verse to the creation of man, but 6 to the creation of woman. The angel of the Lord appeared to a woman twice before he appeared to a man once. The first person to say God had a royal Messiah was a woman. These facts don't mean God exalts women more highly than men, but they do mean God gives to women more dignity than they often receive. God has lessons to teach us about women, for women and from women. We owe it to him to learn what he's teaching. So, next semester, on Thursday afternoons, Dr. Brooks is offering the course Women in the Old Testament. He has invited 10 women to give 12 of the lessons. 5 of the guests have doctorates, and 2 more have almost completed their doctorates. They are professors at DTS, DBU, and Criswell. Another is a veteran missionary to Israel, and all are experienced Bible teachers. God gave us the names of more than 120 women in the Old Testament, plus the stories of others. Christian men and women should pay attention to what the Lord teaches us through them. Again, this is Women in the Old Testament next spring. So, if you're interested, keep that on your radar. There goes that. Now it's my turn. And by the way, as my students know, I wander in the classroom, and everybody's fair game. I was on the committee, in 2017 that created what's up here. This is known here at Criswell College as the graduate profile. A group of people got into a room, I was one of them, and we asked ourselves, when somebody walks across the stage at Criswell College and we hand them that little piece of paper and turn them loose on an unsuspecting world, what do we want them to have developed into over the course of time they've spent with us? And so over about the last 6 weeks, we've been going through this. And so Dr. Woods explained about ambassadors, that they are going to be able to carry Christ to other people. And then Dr. Spring explained about cultivators. When they get to those people, they'll be able to communicate effectively with them and cultivate those relationships. But as Dr. Bridger brought up two weeks ago, not all relationships are smooth. We do live in a fallen world. So we need peacemakers. And the only true way to peace is through Christ and a relationship with him. And then Dr. Corder, otherwise known as Chief of Police Corder, explained about the need for being a problem solver, that this world is full of problems that are very complex and will not be solved with simplistic answers, whereas somebody, as I often say, grabs a microphone, makes a little speech, says, this is how we're going to fix this, and just has a tendency to create other problems. I then have been tasked with the last part. And I have been wrestling with this word for weeks. What does it mean to be professional when you graduate from a Christian organization, otherwise known as Criswell College? And so when I first started thinking about talking to you today, I sort of thought, well, I'm kind of talking about the little cherry on top. That if you're a professional, you build relationships. You're a great communicator. You know how to do conflict management. You are a critical thinker and solving those problems in those organizations and communities. So this should be pretty easy. And then the more I thought about it, the more I thought, no, it's not that easy. And so, what does it mean to be a professional in the Christian realm? What does it mean? Micah, what do you think?
To be able to properly interpret scripture according to context of where it actually is.
Okay. Ooh, very professional sounding. Let me pick another victim. This is fun. Dr. Keyser. What does it mean to be professional in the Christian realm? And you cannot pick Micah's answer, nor can you say he took your answer.
Can you say that in class?
Sure.
Also, never give someone a microphone. That's dangerous.
And I'm going to put you on a timer.
Okay. I think my answer is the holistic pursuit of faithfulness.
Faithfulness. Okay. Let's see. I'm going to pick one more. Hi, Sarah.
I would say that it is, part of it is how you conduct yourself so that you're conducting yourself in a manner that portrays Christ so that other people see that.
Okay. Thank you. You know, I've been thinking about this and thinking about this. And nobody said what the typical answer is because I did put it into context. Of in a Christian realm. What do you think the world thinks professionals are? What's a professional? Say you graduated from Harvard and you're a professional. What does that mean for your future? What is that? Dr. Wurzler is smiling.
When you brought up Harvard, I'll just say making a lot of money.
Oh, thank you. And I did not pay him to say that. That's what the world thinks. That's what professionals are. Doctors and lawyers and accountants and teachers. And they're supposed to make a lot of money. And the verse that we've chosen with our graduate profile that goes along with professional is this one. Do you see a man skillful in his work? He will stand before kings. So I've thought about that too. And I've gone, I've been doing this profession for almost 50 years. I know. I've earned these gray hairs. And so I've never stood before a king, not an earthly king. And I thought, so does that mean I'm a failure? That I'm not a professional? There's lots of days I don't feel very skillful at my work. I struggle and kind of slog my way through. So does that mean I'm not professional? Dr. Woods and I were just talking about this last week. The world says that professionals make a lot of money. I just told y'all when I first started, I work with brilliant people. We're not making a lot of money. Does that mean we're not professionals? The world would say, you're at that very small Christian college over in Dallas, somewhere around Baylor Hospital, I don't know. So if they're breathing, they can teach there. They really don't have to be all that qualified. You know, we're small. And I'm going, sometimes you really start wondering. Our motto here, though, as I kept thinking about it, says that we are shaped by Scripture and sent to serve. It doesn't say we are sent to make a lot of money. And I thought, so if we're sent to serve, what does God expect from us as professionals? Hello? A lot of Christian institutions throw around the word servant leadership. My doctorate is in higher education leadership, which I think is hysterically funny that, well, you have a doctorate and it says this, so you could actually run Criswell College. Dr. Creamer has nothing to worry about. Not at all. So when I'm looking at we're going to be professionals, then I go back to servants. If we're servants, what does that mean? And it's a whole way of thinking that is so paradoxical to the world, that is so upside down. And God, Scripture is full of paradoxes. You have to be weak to be strong. You're not supposed to fear, but the world's a scary place. And so, what is involved in being a servant? And in that cute, I did not come up with that. That's out of a book, by the way. I want to give credit. And so it has to do with your heart, your head, your hands, your habits. And so your heart is the real you. And we all wear masks. And we all pretend everything's great. I love it. How you doing? Oh, I'm fine. But the real you, your heart, that's what's driving your decisions. Those of you that are here on preview day today, you have decisions to make. And I would hope that you're seeking God's will in those decisions. And those of you that are here for the first semester that are sitting back here, I really, really hope you sought God in making that decision. Because the real you is going to come out. It always comes out when there's things don't go quite right. That paper you got back that you just knew you got an A on, and it's just bleeding. All of you in the roots class this week. Yep. Yeah, how did you feel when you got that paper back? That's the real you. And so I went to Proverbs. And yes, I love the King James. I love the language of the King James. I make no apology about the King James, but you do need to know my verses are in the King James. Keep thy heart with all diligence, for out of it are the issues of life. The real you will show. Are you really a servant? Or is it all about you? The current feeling about the Generation Z, or the Homelanders, as some researchers call you, is that you are extremely narcissistic, and it's all about you, and you're the TikTok generation, and everything they come up with is really negative. I actually see a lot of great hope in our young students. And I keep looking at y'all going, okay, So y'all are going to be the one that's going to run my nursing home one day. I really hope that I am not disappointed, that your heart is trying to learn about God and follow him. But from our heart, it's going to start driving your decisions. And part of professionalism is making decisions. The average teacher in an elementary classroom, over the course of that 9 months, they've actually kind of put a counter to it, and I know it's way under. The best they can figure out is that that elementary teacher makes approximately 1 million decisions in that 9 months. 1 million choices that affect lives. And so every decision you make is so incredibly important. I'm just always amazed. God, in all his sovereignty, allows us to make choices. I love the book of Deuteronomy. The book of Deuteronomy, choose. What are you going to choose? And those choices reveal the true you. What's in your heart? What are you choosing? And be not conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. All of you sitting back here in the rows right now, I hope that's what you're doing. If you don't want your thoughts, your presuppositions to be challenged, college may not be for you, because it's all about your mind. We're going to keep pushing about your mind so that you can prove what's good, acceptable, perfect, the will of God. And from that, we're going to see your actions. We had a great speaker yesterday in chapel, and he did a call to action, because your actions can affect change. The world tells you nothing's ever going to change. That's a lie. Just by accepting Christ, you're changed. And so think through that you and your thoughts, your actions get to affect change. And here we plant in Colossians. And some of the upperclassmen, please don't have a reaction because I picked Colossians. Whatsoever you do, do it heartily as to the Lord and not unto men. And this is really what professional looks like in a Christian realm. I was in an institution one time where we had to take a major pay cut, an educational site of higher education as a professor. They pulled us all into a room, that's never good, and they had to give the news. We were all taking a major pay cut. And one of the professors got so angry, she stormed out of the room and slammed a glass door. Yeah, not professional. And our president was in the meeting. He's the one delivering this news. And he looked at me, because I'm just sitting there, and he looked at me and said, "So, are you going to leave too?" And I looked and I said, "I don't work for you. I work for God. He takes care of me. If this is what he's doing, it's going to be fine. I'm not worried about it." And he goes, "Well, okay, let's keep going." That was not just, lip service. That's how I really operate in this realm. And so, because my boss is God, therefore, when I do my job, it's for him. My choices are for him. The way I dress, the way I talk, the way I treat others, what I do when things get sticky, nasty, It's for him. So if he's my boss, everything else falls into place. But I have to practice. Some days are hard. Some days are very hard. So it takes practice. But he gave us an example. He gave us an example. So instead of servant leadership, that's never in Scripture. I always think that's so funny. Nowhere in there does Jesus say, I'm calling you to be a servant leader. He just stops. I'm calling you to be a servant. And so my biblical example, and I'm going to have to go along or else Dr. Sanders is going to get mad at me. And that's the life of Joseph. Joseph was 17 when his brothers threw him in the pit and he sold into slavery. And he goes to work for Potiphar, and we're not quite sure, you know, about how long he'd been there, but he's 17. That's the same age as a lot of you, or real close to you. And yet, as a slave in Potiphar's house, he did such a good job because he knew who his boss was. It wasn't Potiphar. It was God that he's put in charge of Potiphar's house. And then, through no fault of his own, he's thrown in prison. You know, we look at the life of Joseph. I was thinking about this morning. We know the end. He didn't know how long he was going to be a slave. He didn't know how long he was going to be in prison. And prison back then was not prison like today. And yet, he knew who his boss was. It wasn't the guard. It was God. And so he just kept being faithful. And they put him in charge. We really had the prisoner running the prison. So that then, when he went to the palace and stood before a king, the king said, you know what? I'm looking for someone who is discreet and wise. Discreet means you know how to act and you're not going to embarrass me. And you're wise, you're thoughtful, you're a problem solver. So Joseph was put over all of Egypt except for Potiphar. And I thought, oh my goodness. He stood before a king. And I came back to, I've never stood before a king. And this morning on the way here, I started crying. And I went, I stand before a king every day. All day. His name is Jesus. He is my king. So even if on days I don't feel very professional, I don't feel like I'm a success, I don't feel like I'm effective, I am standing before my king, which means it matters. It matters how I talk, it matters how I dress. It matters how I treat others because he's my boss. And I hope in this room he's your boss and that one day we will hear, well done, thy good and faithful servant.
down. I thought I was helping, and I'm not. I'm just hiding it. Yeah. So for those of you who are not normally here, I guess Dr. Brown needs no introduction at this point, but I am Dr. Sanders. I teach New Testament, and I'll let you two.
Are you sure you're Dr. Sanders?
I'm Stephen. I just am. I don't know what I'm allowed to say on preview day, but I'm Stephen. I teach New Testament.
Dr. Spring, English and Communication.
Dr. Moore, I teach New Testament also.
Okay, and we'll have a panel here for about 10 minutes or so. I'm not sure if the link is up. It is, yeah, for the Discord. So we'll talk about what we just heard, and if you have any questions that you want to ask the panel, you can jump on our Discord and see all of Molly's Wednesday chain pictures. But yeah, also, you can ask us a question that way as well. Honestly, I'll just start out by saying that was super, super powerful.
Really good. Dr. Brown, can I ask you, because I know you had something totally different planned, because you and I talked about it. So do you mind filling us in on why you decided to change or what the motivation was?
Well, what she's referring to is major corporations are now hiring workplace etiquette coaches because Generation Z is the most fired generation in all workplaces. Because, not because they're not brilliant people, well-trained people, great at their skill. They're just not very nice, good people. They come to work in their pajamas. They leave their trash all over. They don't bathe. They're not bathing, like for...
Y'all take a bath.
Like for a week. I can't imagine. And they're actually paying individuals to come in and sit these young people in a room and doing, what does it mean to be a professional? Because apparently you didn't have mothers.
Not y'all. Y'all aren't going to do that.
And so that was originally, we were kind of going to go that direction, and God said, oh, stop. No, your students bathe. They don't need to hear this. And so he took me a totally different direction.
Thanks for bathing, fun. You guys.
Yeah. Good job, guys. We're so proud of y'all. Yeah.
So we've got a question here about, which I think is a really good one, about what it looks like to be professional, or maybe how that changes when there's either a lot of stress or maybe chaos or just people are at each other's throats. And I think, you know, I know I've been in work environments like that in the past, not here, but I have previous job experience where it was just in a church and it was very messy, very chaotic. It was just really difficult. And so I was wondering if y'all had any thoughts on that.
Wait, what did you do?
I ended up leaving. It was an internship. But honestly, I think one of the things I learned was just because somebody professes Christ doesn't mean they treat each other well. Yeah. And I think one of the things for me, even looking back on that, you know, I had a conversation with a student. We had gone to lunch. This was a couple of years ago. Which he was wanting, he wanted to go and do, I think, doctoral level work at some point. It was a Criswell student. He wanted to go do doctoral level work in Europe. And he wanted to figure out how to get his writing sample good enough to do that. And if I thought he could, and I said, well, you can. I said, but in my opinion, your writing is not up to that standard right now. And what's going to have to happen is you're going to have to improve. But I wouldn't really worry about, like, your motivation is to go study in Europe or something like that. I think your motivation has to be every day you flush the day before and you take your best swing at the day, you know, and you do your best work and you get up and you do your best work and you get up. And I think that in environments too where it's really chaotic, it's really difficult, I think you on some level have to take it day by day. And on that day, you go in and you give everything you have, and then you go to sleep and you wake up the next day and you give everything you have and you try to treat people not as the circumstances are dictating, but just like, how is it that you treat people? You know, that kind of thing. I was in the leadership class yesterday, and one of the students was talking about how he had done basic training, and the way he did basic training was kind of like that. It was like he knew how long he would be like in the military in basic training, but he had to look at it as today, and then there's no other days. And then when you get to the next day, it's today again, and it's today again, and you just do it for that day. And so I think for me personally, and some of you, you get practice with that in college. Like, it's a difficult semester for some of you. I know it's a difficult semester for some of the professors. What does it look like to, like, take your best swing at today, you know?
I would add to that, too, that when you're in a workplace, I mean, you can familiarize yourself with policies and procedures and, like, who should you go to if you're having problems? Like, mm-hmm. should you go to your boss? Are there other people in a workplace who can give you advice on how to deal with difficult situations? And always, I think being a person of integrity and like Stephen said, coming to that place, recognizing even if you're not in a position of leadership, that your attitude and the way you're responding to things can provide leadership in a chaotic situation. Does that make sense?
Our church right now, our pastor retired in April. We are a very, very small body. We're like 25 people. So if you know of somebody who's looking for a preaching job and doesn't mind using the King James, we're in the market. But last week, we had a guest on Wednesday night who was going to pastor. And that night did not go as planned. One of the men in the church, who is a brand new member, and see, this is, he's only been a member of our church for about 4 weeks. He just exploded in anger that we didn't already have a decision made and a pastor called, and why aren't we calling the gentleman who was our guest that night? He'd been there a few weeks, and it's like, what in the world? And I mean, it has been a long time since I've been in a church worship service with yelling across a table between two individuals. And I sat there for a little bit and I thought, I can't do this. And so I got up and I went into the sanctuary in the dark with no air conditioning and just kept praying. And that's not, oh, you're just so holy. No, it was my way of calming and turning things over to God and going, in this kind of chaos, I don't have an answer. And me jumping into the fray is not going to help. And every so often it calmed down. I think, okay, Lord, can I go back in? And then it'd start up again. I go, no, I can't go back in again. And I finally finished and I went and sat in the hall, and there were a couple of other people who had to leave and were just sitting outside. They just could not deal with that. And in a few minutes, the gentleman who was the new member, he stormed out of the church and his wife left behind him crying. And so we went back in, and the gentleman who was our guest pastor for that night, it was amazing. He said, okay, I'm ready to preach now. And he went to the lectern and he preached and was such a gentleman, such a consummate gentleman. No, we are not going to call him to be our pastor. There's other qualifications. But to be able to do that after you've sat there and listened to two men yell at each other over whether or not you're going to get this job, and then to be able to step to the pulpit and then preach. And he was bringing a message on the work of the Holy Spirit. And it was like this, to be able to do that when all that chaos has been going on around you. And yeah. You know, I was not the only person praying. There were other people who had, some had gone out in the parking lot to escape the rancor, but they were praying. And then we all came back in and sat and listened. It's like, okay, now we can worship. Now we can worship. So yeah, when you're dealing with that kind of conflict, I tell the education students, part of training is to help you be the calm head in the room, because we're dealing with people and people are messy, and you have to be the calm head in the room. And sometimes it just means lowering your voice and having something a little calmer in your tone. And so, those things come up, and training really does help, though. It really does help.
So we had a couple of different questions about professionalism. Given our time, I was wondering if each of you had one piece of advice for students on how to grow professionally. Like, what does it look like for them to take a step towards being more professional or something like that? I don't know if y'all have thoughts on that.
Yes.
Now, does it say just what to grow, what personally, professionally?
One of the questions was, what are some things we can do to prepare to be proper professionals? One is, what if you work in a workplace that doesn't appreciate you as a staff member? How do you be professional? And then, what does professionalism as a concept lose if it's mission work, if anything? So if you want to take any of those, but I was just lumping them together.
I guess the first one is the one that grabbed me initially. Yep. I would encourage you to use this as a training ground and to practice. I know all of you, especially right, my students in the back, we all know how to be unsuccessful. we all have habits. We all have things that we do. We all procrastinate. Mr. Kevin, are you back there? I see you. He jokingly had said, Dr. Spring, it's not due for 2 weeks. I got time. And so, yeah.
To be fair, he's got plenty of time.
Now. And yes, I get it, right. But if we know how to be unsuccessful, then we also know how to be successful. And I firmly believe that what we do here is what we're going to do out there. And so trying to identify the things that I want to work on and practice, because it's not going to happen overnight. I thought when I graduated that it was magically just going to fix itself. Like then, yes, I'm an adult. Everything that I've ever struggled with as a believer or as a person was just going to fix itself. And I was very sad to discover that's not true. And so, I wish I had spent more time as a college student really engaging with the things that I wanted to develop.
So I would say clear communication, what are the expectations placed on me in this job or this position? What are my expectations? What do I want out of this job, this position? Learn how to communicate clearly. How do you go to somebody and say, hey, something's not working. Something's wrong here. I don't understand this. Help me understand this, or let me help you understand kind of what's going on here, without having the temperature go up, 10 degrees. Practice how to, keep your voice calm. How to maybe, do you need to go in with a list in front of you so you don't forget your points, that sort of thing. And actually learn that conflict with somebody does not always have to be personal. Right? In a workplace, right? You may disagree with somebody about how something needs to be done, or what the best way something needs to be done. And then you have to decide, okay, what are my pressure points? What are the things that for my integrity would mean I really shouldn't work here anymore? Or what are the things that are I disagree with my boss on this, but I could probably just keep working here and do it his or her way, even though I don't think that's the best way. So those sort of things, I think, can prepare you for that sort of thing.
I think that what I would recommend, we'll put it that way, is that if we can keep in our mind that everything we do is for the Lord. Everything? Yes, everything we do. So that when we are faced with that task that is unpleasant, that's God teaching us humility sometimes. Dr. Woods gave a quiz last week in the Roots class, a pop quiz. And at the end, one of our students came up turning in her quiz, and she said, "Thank you, Dr. Woods. That was a very humbling experience." And so, on a certain level, practicing some humility that you have not arrived, we have not arrived, I have not arrived, that'll be on the other side of the veil. And so you always have something to learn. God is a teacher, and he is teaching you something every day, all day. And some of those lessons are not fun. They challenge. They make you hold the mirror up and go, "Ooh, that's me. Yeah, that's you." And so just practicing that humility. I tell the students in the Roots class, if you can ever flip your thinking that every assignment in a syllabus is a gift. It doesn't feel like it. It doesn't look like it. But professors working in conjunction with, believe it or not, the Holy Spirit is guiding a lot of those decisions, so that you are being trained to do what he's called you to do. And what you think you're going to do is rarely what you actually wind up doing as far as your calling. My plan was not to be a college professor. That was not my plan. And so practicing humility, that everything we're doing, God is teaching us every day, all day. And we need to be lifelong learners of God and what he wants to teach us.
Yeah. All I would say is pick somebody who's about 20 years older than you, who seems to be doing a good job, and pay a lot of attention to that person. Yeah. Like, figure out what they're doing. Let's give it up again for Dr. Brown. Great. Now, as Adrian mentioned, and I'm sure all of our students know, we will not be having Wednesdays next week because we won't be having class next week. I know. Boo. Yeah. At least I won't. Y'all can come. So we will see you back in 13 days and 23 hours. You're dismissed.